Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Wayfinders Church Podcast. Wayfinders Church, we do three things. We love first, because when we get outside of ourselves and serve, not only do good things happen in our cities, but the tumultuous, did I just make a word up?
No, that's a word.
It's a word? Yeah. Okay. The big walls in our life come crumbling down, and then we do life together. Because we're not made to do it alone. We're made to do it together. And then we live the story. So we lean into the life that God is calling us to. And that is what we're going to jump into on this special day of the podcast. Because I have with me the man, the myth, the legend. Are you a legend?
No, haven't been around long enough for that.
My good friend Ryan Hannay is with me. Say what's up, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Today I just thought we would indulge everyone with a conversation about calling. But before we get to that, I have this love of Frederick Buechner and Abraham Joshua Heschel. Hmm. And I usually have some sort of quote that I quote at the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
And then talk about why I love it, because that's what I do. So what is your go-to quote on the spot? I did not prep you for this. Go-to quote, do you have one?
Well, I mean, since we're talking about calling, you know, I remember as a youth always being fed C.S. Lewis quote, God doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called. You know, that was just the bread and butter.
Say that again, and say it right into this microphone for everybody to hear.
Yeah, you know, as many times as I've said it, I remember back in early on middle school hearing, God doesn't call the qualified, but qualifies the called.
Boom. We may not need to say anything else.
Yeah, I mean, the true genius never reveals his sources, so I just revealed mine because I'm not a genius.
That makes two of us, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
What a great way to open. So, the idea of calling... in our culture, I think, especially with millennials, Christian, not Christian, the idea of calling is out there for everyone. What am I supposed to do with my life?
Yeah, sure.
What am I supposed? I don't really want to do that with my life. I sound facetious when I say that.
No, that's okay.
But it's out there for people. Would you agree?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we all want to be a part of something. And so whether it's like, I just want to get a call from my friend to go hang out down the road, go to the party, go to the restaurant and eat a meal or whatever it might be. Or I want to get a call for that from that company to a higher paying job. Or I want to get a call from whether some divine source or something. We all want to move from where we are to somewhere else. There seems to be this state of dissatisfaction sometimes with staying still.
Okay. I want to come back to that.
Yeah.
Actually, let's just dive into that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just dive into the dissatisfaction.
Yeah.
Because I do think there is a sense of like manifest destiny, but it's not like across the country anymore. It's like, can I be the self-actualized person to do what I want to do and make a difference in the world because it's what I wanted to do?
Yeah.
And so the dissatisfaction happens, I think, in two ways. And I want you to jump in and maybe weigh in on your perspective, which, by the way, did we tell people what you do?
I don't think so. It's not really that important, but I mean, I run our youth ministry. I'm a pastor at South Austin Church, just a little bit north of where Todd lives, and have been here for a few years now and really love what I do. Feel really fulfilled.
Good.
Yeah,
great. Okay. So you work with the juvens.
I work with the youngins, yeah. And I am quickly realizing the gap is getting wider and wider every day. That I'm not really that old, but every week it seems they come with something that I am just hopelessly out of touch.
Wait till everybody's on a new app.
Yeah.
And you've never even heard of it. And you're like, wait a second. I'm like in touch with things.
Yeah.
You're not.
I thought I was cool for using Facebook, and then I got called old for using Facebook. So.
Yeah. So pretty soon you'll be behind because you're not using the USB vape drive.
There you go. Yeah, I hope not.
Okay, side note. So that idea of discontentment has this kind of ring of two things, right? One of it is I'm not satisfied because I'm not living out my dream.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, I'm not satisfied, the man's kept me down. Right? Like, oh, I looked for a job and I couldn't find it.
Sure.
And, but I think part of that comes back to this idea that we believe somehow, whether you're a Christ follower or not, I think there's this idea that we have as a culture, as a people, that there is something out there for me. And if I discover it, I will finally find contentment.
Sure.
How would you say that looks like for you and your friends? And then what does that look like in the culture that you're working with day in and day out?
Well, it's been really interesting to observe, you know, like trace it back through history, the emergence of Renaissance man, this whole idea of like being the best of not only your trade, but everyone else's trade too. And so that you were the best of the best in all areas, which required this sense of like effort. You had to commit your time, you know, the idea of committing 10,000 hours to perfect anything, like that's a lot of hours if you're going to perfect like lots of different trades. But now there's, with this emergence of technology, we don't necessarily, to be attributed with the mastery of a trade, we don't have to actually master the trade. We just have to make it appear that we have mastered the trade, portray it somehow through imagery or metaphor or just online presence, or even through interactions. Because if we keep our interactions at a distance, and we don't allow people to really like invest into our lives, we don't have to reveal our inadequacies. And so I can convince people all day long that I'm a master of all trades. You know, like those that, I remember this experience in college when I was a senior about to graduate, and all these freshmen had come in and like apparently heard stories about like things that I had done. Not that I had like ruled the campus or anything, but there's this kind of like deity that had been created out of who I was, you know, as a senior. And I remember it like even when I was a freshman, I came in and there were these people, I was like, oh, like, that's the guy, you know, that's the person that rules.
They're legends.
Yeah, and it, like, even today, I'm sure most of the stories that I know aren't true, but that they were the stories.
Right.
And so that same idea carries into, like, who we are as, who we are as individuals, because it, when we pursue anything, we've been given this ability to craft identity without effort. And that scares me.
So I want to pick up on that thread because I was talking with someone the other day and we were talking about the band Fun. Do you remember the band Fun?
Yeah. Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They had that, you know, one album that blew up, right?
Yeah.
What people don't know is that the band Fun was previously called The Format.
Okay.
And I knew the band The Format before they were Fun.
Yeah.
And
well, of course.
They had a couple of like strange indie hits. They were an indie band.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with them, whoever I was having the conversation with, and they're like, yeah, they were like an overnight success. And I thought, no,
yeah.
There is no such thing as an overnight success.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
How many tours, how many songs, how many, like, and even the people that maybe that was their first, like, actual recording or that was their first actual job, how many hours did they put into the character, to the tenacity, to the things behind the thing
mm-hmm.
that you can't see that make that appear successful?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we've intertwined these ideas of calling and success.
Yeah.
Rather than talking about what a calling really is.
Mm-hmm.
And a calling is more like a calling out.
Yeah.
In the sense of what you're made for, the way that you are wired. mm-hmm. not becoming the self-realized or the self-made man. What do you think?
I mean, to kind of interweave like what I was saying, I think about this whole idea of what we were made for. There's discontentment in that because it is specified. Because however we want to say we were made, like, the fact is that all of us bring a certain amount of talents and abilities to the table, which means that we don't have other talents and abilities. And so what you are good at is not necessarily like what I'm good at. Or so then to live into that means that I abandon the hope of ever having that certain skill set. Not that I can't ever delve in those fields, but if I am to really live into who I am, then I can't ever pursue that identity. And so there seems to be this kind of, rather than diving into who we are, there's this contentment with just
don't tell threads. Me what I can't do.
Yeah, exactly. Don't tell me who I can't be. You know, I can be an author, a musician, a photographer, and all of those things because they're all my Instagram profile bio. You know, like, I am all of these things. But when we live into something, we suddenly like invalidate ourselves in certain conversations. You know, if I am going to be a professional photographer, I can't necessarily relate to musicians as much. Or if I'm going to be a scholar, you know, am I going to be able to relate to those that aren't proficient in that field?
Have you ever met someone who's 100%, like, they're all in on whatever their thing mm-hmm. is? And you think, man, like, that passion, like, I don't know if they're good or not.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if they're successful or not, but they're onto something, and yeah. I feel it. It's palpable.
Yeah.
I wonder if part of the problem with calling is we feel like we have to put to death some dream in pursuit of another one. And yet I've met the people that said, no, I don't do that. I only do this. This is my thing. Mm-hmm. And they look and feel so alive.
Yeah.
Like they've stumbled into somehow, like, they've found happiness. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not discontent. They're more satisfied than they would have been otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting then asking the question, how do we connect with those that are not in our calling or specified skill set or identity?
Yeah.
You know, am I actually able to connect with somebody who has no shared interest with me? And I think yes, and I will come back to it here in a little bit, but that's the fear. You know, how many times have we had a conversation and somebody says, yeah, do you know this, you ever seen this movie? Oh yeah. Oh, I've seen that movie. Or, you know this band? Yep, I know that band. Because if you say no, it immediately disconnects you from that person.
Yeah, rather than saying, no, tell me about it. Mm-hmm. Like, which would obviously still keep you connected.
Yeah.
And engaged.
But then it creates hierarchy in people's minds. That if you come to me and say, oh, have you ever seen this TV show? If I say no, then he's not going to want to hang out with me anymore. You know, is he going to think that I am lesser of a human?
Right. Oh, man. There's already been so much that I just need to go back and just think on that we've talked about. But let's get back to this idea of calling. So when I say calling, I want to specify for anybody that's listening what I mean by mm-hmm. that.
Yeah.
So I come from the Christian tradition where calling is somehow uniquely tied to the divine giving a specific direction to only you as an individual, which is pretty poor theology, because most of the time the calling is for the people, and then there are seasons where specific leaders are asked to fulfill functions. But by and large, the individuality is an anomaly, not the whole.
Mm-hmm.
And the individuality of a calling is so that the whole can fulfill its destiny.
Yeah.
Not so that that person can be the self-made man.
Yeah.
Or woman.
Yeah.
And so So the tradition that I grew up in said, you know, God is going to call some of you to do this and some of you to do that. And I remember, I'll get into my calling and then mm-hmm. I want to ask you about yours. Yeah. And then I want to kind of debunk the mythology that I share as a story, right? Because I have like a pre-scripted story of my call, right?
Yeah. You know, it's like I had to write it down.
Like a pat
so many
answer.
Times.
And
copy and paste every time.
And so, but this idea that I was at a, like an old school evangelist, like tent revival thing.
Waving hankies all over the place.
Yeah. Like only the guy was mostly like showman musician.
Yeah.
And very little like Bible and like, he wasn't the pulpit thumper guy. Yeah. He was like, if Billy Joel and Elton John had a suit-wearing conservative love child, I don't know if I can say that on this podcast. If that offends you, I'm sorry. I don't mean for it to. But that's like, you know, I mean, he was playing the piano and the foot, like waving out the side. You can't see, but you can picture someone playing the piano and their foot, like kicking at the crowd, like going after it, but a suit wearing guy. And so, he put on this whole shtick and show, and then kind of as the immortal words of Nacho Libre, he got down to the nitty gritty and, you know, at the end of it, he said, you know, all of this is because I have this specific talent, this calling. I play, I provide entertainment, but the thing is, no matter who you are and no matter what you do, God has shaped you that way so that you can do good for others. And so some of you will be teachers. And you'll change the world. And some of you will be doctors and you'll heal people. And some of you, I don't think he used trash man, but like he was like literally like, you'll have a job that you think is meaningless. Yeah. And yet you are helping care for the earth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of you will be pastors. And you will raise people up so that we can multiply the idea of God's calling on our lives, which taps into this idea that all of life is some sort of mission where God, the good creator, has set up creation in such a way that we get to shape it. Mm-hmm. We have a role to play in it, and that the end goal and the theology for that, we've talked about it on the podcast, but is like a eschatology, mm-hmm. right? And a realized or eschatological realism is this idea of self-fulfillment, right? That fulfilling action in the end is us, not me as a person, but us as a people, shaping and taking society and relationship and the world and the material and the earth and the wood and the things, and then making stuff, which is why we find such beauty in Apple products.
Yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
I can create with it, which is why we find such meaning in conversations over cups of coffee like this one, because it's tapping into that
creates something
primordial, wiring,
and
on a molecular level it mm-hmm. somehow resonates. And so that's the tradition I grew up in, but it got used in so many ways to be very negative, like mm-hmm. you have one calling, that's the label for you, and that's it. Well, if you're an entrepreneurial person and your Instagram profile says that you're a photographer, a musician, a speaker, an artist, a part-time Uber driver, whatever it says that you are, Why can't you be all those five things? That's not your calling, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was forced into this idea that my calling was one thing, and that was it, and that was the label put on me.
Yeah.
And then I didn't never fit that mold very well. And so I was always depressed because I was never good at whatever that mold that I thought was supposed to be there. So tell me about your understanding of calling, specifically as it relates to the divine, and then maybe we can talk about how that's contributed from all over the place. So,
anyway. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. It's a lot to unpack, and it's good. Calling has been a really predominant word in my life. You know, like Todd, I grew up in a Christian tradition. My parents were missionaries. I was pretty familiar with the Christian church from a really young age. And that carried through into my teenage years. And the things that you were saying, this, you know, like Billy Joel, Elton John evangelist was saying, I'm pretty sure I was at that same one, probably sitting in the row behind you, hearing those kinds of things, that calling was all about living into the plan. You know, what is, there's this big puzzle and you're all a piece and you all have to fit into it for the puzzle to be realized. And it's going to be so sweet when it's all finished.
But then you have to find your specific piece in a 2 billion piece puzzle.
Yeah. Oh, and not to mention the people that lived before us and that will live after us. You know, even more than two trillions, you know, endless amounts of individuals. And I've had this conversation with my fiance a lot. We talk about this whole idea of the one. You know, how many times have you heard people say, "Have you found the one?" You know, they'll say to Michaela and I, like, "Isn't it great that found the one?" And I say, well, no, because if I found the one, like, what if I found the wrong one and somebody else found the wrong one? Did I just throw off the entire ecosystem of relationship?
Right.
You know, like, I believe that my fiance is like a great one for me. We've had this conversation. We say, like, we feel like we are compatible in lots of ways, but by no means do we necessarily feel like we were like the ones crafted exactly for each other, because if we messed up, then we keep someone else from experiencing their one. And then one tiny speck can throw off the entire system.
Right.
And so, like, that definitely then played into calling. I would hear all the time, you are called to vocation.
You just got to find your call.
Yeah.
What's your call?
And those two words of vocation and call were intermixed as synonymous terms often that...
So now whatever my job is, that's clearly what I'm called to do.
Mm-hmm. Because job structure has existed in the same way, apparently, since the beginning of time. You know, our Western understanding of vocation has always existed, is what that builds off of, is that who we are now is the predominant worldview and societal structure. And so this is what we're going to base all of our ideas off of.
Right. Well, but isn't that what we want to know? What do you do?
Exactly. That's always the question. What do you like?
Wait a second. Are you saying what do I do with my life?
Or it's
what
like that
do for money.
You know, the office space. Let's see. So what is it that you do here? What do you tell me what you do here? And we're wrapped up wanting to know what is your purpose here. You know, I went to a cookout the other day with another pastor here at the church, and just a guy at our church invited us, and there were lots of people in the community, and they're all trying to network, you know. So they're like, "Hi, I'm such and such running for this position in state senate." And so I've just come up, "Hi, I'm Ryan. What do you do? Why are you here?"
Like,
I'm here because there's really good food.
I was invited?
Yeah, and my friend Tom invited me to come hang out. But if so, I can tell you who I am and what I do, you know.
Is this guy just a loafer?
Yeah, exactly. But I remember hearing that all the time, and you know, I was I was pretty engaged at our local church and our youth ministry, and would hear that language of calling over and over and over. And I remember beginning the journey, just trying to understand why God would want me. You know, that was kind of the first hoop that I had to jump through if I was going to buy into any of it, was this idea that God had created us for something and therefore wanted us, had some sort of desire to use, and didn't just puppeteer the whole world, but there was some sort of invitation. And I remember like struggling with that idea because at a really young age, my parents got divorced. And I began to struggle with not only who I was as an individual, but who I would be to others in relationship. And then that became a wall for anything else I was to understand. You know, how could God desire me if I didn't even really desire myself? Because there was so much broken relationship around me that I just kind of dug myself into this perpetual spiral of depression.
Yeah.
And then going to youth group on Wednesday nights and hearing my youth pastor say, well, you're called to something. I say, well, yeah, other people might be, but I'll just kind of tag along for the ride.
Right. I'm not one of those special pieces that gets played on the puzzle board.
Yeah. I can be the table that the puzzle is built upon. You know, I'll say maybe I'll look at it and enjoy it, but
yeah. I think you tapped into one of these like really, really big veins, I think, for people. When you get asked the question, what's your calling? Or when you ask yourself, what am I about? You're honestly, you're saying, what's the one, right? Yeah. You are saying, I can do anything I want. What is that one thing that that God is asking me to do? Mm-hmm. And we try to sell it as some sort of position, some sort of importance. And honestly, that's how I stumbled into ministry. And I say I stumbled in, like I knew that I could do ministry because I had been around it my whole life. I knew that I enjoyed the study of the Bible, and I knew that I enjoyed seeing transformation happen in people's hearts and lives and cities that without the presence of people pouring into those marginalized places of our lives, something good wouldn't have come out of that. And so for me I always struggled with the I'm not really called. So you know, they would say, well, are you called to be a pat, like when you're getting credentialed, by the way, if you're listening and you think you need credentialing, let me just tell you, you don't. Yeah. You don't. But in the pastor world, that's like a big deal. You're supposed to be credentialed, which means somebody else says that you're okay, that you're real, or that you're somehow valid now. and so there was this whole process of credentialing, and I'm not diminishing the importance of affirmation and the importance of accountability. I love all of those things. So don't mishear what I'm trying to say. It's just God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. And what I mean by that is this. As I was exploring ministry, I was supposed to give some sort of specific answer, like, well, are you called to be a pastor or a missionary or a youth pastor or a, like, there were all these preset categories, and my answer was,
I don't know.
I love Jesus.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
And, I knew the things that I liked about ministry. I liked building teams. I liked communicating. I liked setting people's passions on, like, and just unleashing it. I loved those things. I didn't really care for much else. So, like, reports,
Yeah.
Like, you know, talking about Office Space, like, my TPS reports would have never gotten done. And so... But there was this like idea that there was a vein out there of you had to pick a category and a road, and that was the thing. And what I realized as I was stumbling into ministry was I wanted to explore what was out there, and I wanted things to be seasons, and I wanted them to grow into each other. And I wanted to somehow use what I had learned from, you know, managing a golf course. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to use my retail and sales experience. And I wanted to use, you know, these, like when I worked for a publication company, like I wanted to somehow use this weird, eclectic mm-hmm. picture of my life for ministry. And it wasn't until after I had been in ministry for full time for 4 or 5 years that I finally was like, oh, okay, this is like dating. There's not a one. I just decide what I want to do. Mm-hmm. And then I just go do it. And so calling for me shifted mm-hmm. to where I feel like we all have the same calling, and that's to love people. It's just that simple. We all have the same calling. It's to love people. How you get to live that out is up to you. I chose to start an organization with mine.
Yeah.
And so we started Wayfinders so that I could mobilize people loving people.
Yeah.
So that I could help people find a way of living that helped them love people. Like, that's it. That's the way I chose to get into it. But when I say, like, God called me, God didn't call me specifically to here. I chose here. Mm-hmm. I like it here, right? God didn't call me specifically to Wayfinders. I chose the name because I think it's cool, right? Like, I'm not going to hyper-spiritualize it. I think the calling was very simple. We're called to love people.
Yeah.
And then, like, if you break it down to, like, I'll just make it spiritual for a minute, and then you can bring
de-spiritualize it.
I'll make it spiritual for a minute. Jesus summed up the whole thing with two ideas. What are you supposed to do with life? Love God. Well, that's a posture of your heart, right? And then love people. That's an action.
Yeah, that's all good. It's interesting thinking back through the progression of from this spiral of depression that I said I experienced, and then where I went from there. Because you say stumbled into ministry, I would take the opposite approach of interpreting my experience. I remember very, very clearly feeling these feelings of being directed in a certain way.
Like someone else was steering you?
There was an element of someone else, but maybe something else. And okay. So at the time, the way that I interpreted it, because the people that were speaking into my life, I interpreted, this is God directing me towards that which God has created me to be. And so I remember feeling marginalized in my own faith community, frustrated with that, but then wishing people would respond to me in certain ways, but then kind of felt this calling or prompting or whatever you might want to call it from God, reminding me that the things that we desire in the world, we often can do ourselves or must even do. If we wish to see a certain reality come into play, we can't just expect others to respond. And so the desires that I had for my own faith community, I remember even out of that simple reminder, feeling this push or prompting or calling, if we want to call it, towards participating in crafting positive faith communities. And so from there then went, and it didn't help then getting to my senior year, and this whole calling continued to be misunderstood and misinterpreted because it was interpreted into where am I going to go to school? And then once I decided where I was going to go to school, it's what am I going to study? And then once I decided what I was going to study, what emphasis are you going to put on that degree? And then once I decided what emphasis, where are you going to work? Where are you going to go from there? And so it was all kind of a set of dominoes. You know, one had to happen before the next. And if they didn't happen in this order, then they weren't valid. And the whole system would be thrown off. But I nonetheless went into college with this feeling of calling towards youth ministry because it's what I was most familiar with. and I remember, you know, getting asked the question, where are you called in the church? And I experiencing some of the same frustrations you said about, is it senior pastor, youth ministry, associate pastor, music minister, you know, like what?
Why do we even have the categories?
I don't know. I was like, well, I like all those. Is there an all category? You know, like, is there a, I want to work in the church category? And what I realized is that these structures that have been created for us to fall into kind of base themselves off this theory that society, in order to be stable, must stay stagnant at times. That the systems and structures that we have created cannot be fluid, because if they're fluid, they'll fall down. So when you say, I just wanted to explore and have conversation, when I would bring an idea to the table, it would somehow threaten all that had been built and created. And so even experiencing that today, and I guarantee somebody listening has experienced this frustration that,
yeah,
you know, am I allowed to ask that question?
Am I allowed to bring that idea to my boss? Can we do things differently here?
Even if it's no, like, does me bringing the question just destroy everything? Yeah. Does it now invalidate me as scholar, or does it uncredential me if I bring a question when the whole community has been structured around a finite answer to this question?
Yeah.
And so calling, my biggest struggle, but also best realization, was realizing that it is fluid. That which we have been called to, or that which we have been created to, or however we want to talk about it, it has changed each and every day for me.
Yeah. For those of you who are Elizabeth Gilbert fans, she wrote Eat, Pray, Love, and then she wrote a book called Big Magic. If you haven't read Big Magic, it's quite interesting. Because she more or less dances around the idea of the divine as, you know, this magical kind of thing. But this idea that she had a book that was given to her and then she shelved it. And then 20 years later, she meets with this new author. And the book idea is literally the same idea of the book that she shelved.
Hmm.
Characters' names were different, but it was a period piece. It was like this awkward, like an oil rig in Brazil and like all these things. And it's the same story. It's the same plot. It's the same idea, but she didn't write it. And so coming back to that idea that, you know, Jesus says, we just celebrated in Palm Sunday, right? That if I tell these people to stop, the rocks are going to cry out for them, right? That maybe there is a sense of like something's going to happen, and maybe it's you who participates with it, maybe it's someone else, but that makes it seasonal. That makes it, I can tap into this participation or not. And I really love that idea as a calling, because what it says to every single person. So maybe if you've been listening to this ridiculously long conversation that we've had and jumped around with us, if you've made it this far, maybe you've been really struggling with the question of, what am I supposed to do? Maybe you've been struggling around the idea of, am I qualified to do that? I don't know where you're stuck. But if you think that there's just one thing out there for you, don't. Yeah. If there is one thing, it is this: love people. And how that gets played out, you decide. I think the most powerful and empowering thing that we could ever possibly hear in our places of work is when someone else says, you decide. Hmm. And I wonder if God has somehow said, if this is what I want, you decide how that happens.
Yeah.
And then, doesn't that give us freedom to remake the whole thing, whatever it is?
Yeah.
And so if you've been struggling with the idea of a call, I want you to hear this. There isn't just one right answer.
Yeah.
It It's like, how do you empower volunteers and leaders? You have to cater your approach. Mm-hmm. There's not a one size fits all. So how would you think that there's a one path for you? Mm-hmm. It is your path. You get to decide. The goal of the path is, along the way, whoever gets put into your life, mm-hmm. whatever possible stakes that you can amp up, mm-hmm. whatever it is, figure out a way to love people with it. And mm-hmm. you will be fulfilling every bit of call into your life. I don't know what that looks like. You decide.
That phrase "along the way" is so good, because you'd said the word eschatology earlier. If you've been saying that word well, like it has to do with where are we going to go, what's going to happen to us, and so we get so distracted with the end goal, so we forget about the along the way.
Yeah,
that and don't hear me wrong when I say this, that we overly deify Jesus and his time on earth, that Jesus was divine, but his full humanness we ignore. And so the Christian tradition has misunderstood what Jesus is calling us to do, that rather than calling us to be disconnected angels, calls us to be better humans. And so the question for us is, how can I be the best human that I can be? And what that means is not getting wrapped up in our inadequacies, but realizing that we have been given the ability, maybe not through ourselves, but through the communities around us, we have been given the ability to be better humans. That humanity as a whole can do really terrible things, but humanity as a whole can do really amazing, uplifting, encouraging, long-lasting things. When I walk outside and I see skyscrapers being built, I remind myself of when humans come together, things can be created. But then I drive by the dump and I think, when humans come together, really terrible things can be created. But we live in that tension where we have to ask ourselves, if I want to participate in something, what do I want to participate in? And Jesus asked that question for us. Do you want to participate in that which is going to bring harm to yourself and to others? Or do you want to participate in that which builds something better?
Yeah. So the real question is, what's your call?
Yeah.
And I think that question, my friends, is never actually answered. It's, what am I going to do today?
Yeah.
And I can answer that today. I can't answer it for tomorrow. I can't look back and say, oh, I did something or I didn't do something. It just happened or it didn't happen.
Yeah.
But I can somehow participate today in shaping lives and the world around me. And so if you've ever thought, I have to shave this part of my life so that I can be a puzzle piece to fit into a multi-billion picture puzzle, stop. If you felt like there was only one path for you and you feel utterly disconnected and disappointed and frustrated, stop. Find something you love and along the way, love some people.
Yeah.
Grace and peace, my friends. And that is a conversation with my friend Ryan about calling.